Hello, and welcome to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and with me is the Midwestern friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, Teal. Because, you know, it's a multiverse, and there's many, many Spider-Men.
There's not even a Spider-Man movie this summer, is there? Did I miss one?
I don't know. I mean, like, I guess it takes a long time to animate those things. Didn't they, like, work on them conjunction? You know, like,
I think they did. That should be coming out, like, this year.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't really. I'm, like, one of those people that didn't seem to like the last one. So everybody else loved it, but I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't love it either. And a big part of the reason I didn't love it is that it was a part one. And because of that, the story structure is all over the place.
I didn't see the first one in the theater, and then I regretted it. Saw the second one in IMAX,
yeah,
and I kind of regretted it. So I don't think I'm going to see the third one in the theater.
Yeah, I'm not going to see the third one in the theater. Yeah.
Because even if they say, oh, it's great, well, they said the last one was great.
And everyone said the last one was great, so. Yep, here we are, some more people joining in the pile of people not going to the movies this year.
Well, I've been to the movies, I mean, more than you have.
Yeah, but you've been, I've been more than most people, and I've been like three times.
This year you've been to the theater three times?
No.
See, you haven't been a single time this year, have you? No.
Let's see, I'm trying to think.
You did not. You have not been to the movie theater. I have.
I have not been to the movie theater. You're right. The last thing I saw in the theater was it was in December.
I saw in the theater Dune 2.
Yeah.
Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was this year, but it was last year's movie. It was Godzilla Zero, Year Zero, Black and White Edition there.
Okay, yeah.
Which is absolutely incredible.
Yep, heard good things about it. I will watch it eventually, but yeah, didn't. You're
such a, well, you don't like God. I find out you don't like Godzilla. What the frick?
Yeah, I don't like Godzilla.
But this is not the same thing as like your typical. It is amazing.
Here's the thing. It's not that I don't like Godzilla. It's that I never really got into Godzilla.
Yeah, but this is like, I'm telling you, I practically, like, this is crazy, but I practically had tears in my eyes.
Okay,
this movie.
I'm definitely going to watch it.
What's so great about it is it's set immediately at the end of World War II.
Oh, that is pretty great.
And what the movie is in a deeper level, it is about Japanese coming to terms with their role in World War II and coming out as losers.
Right.
And this sense of like identity loss and all that they thought they were fighting for. And then you have, you know, introduction of the nuclear age, right? And then you have this creature that has come out of it. It's this sense of now we have something that we could fight for that maybe we can win.
Right, right.
It's really incredible. I mean, you've got to see this movie. Plus, the effects are just amazing. And when they bring up the original Godzilla scores, you're just getting chills in your spine, and you're like, why did it take so long for someone to figure out how to do this movie right? It's like it's been there all along, and finally someone gets it.
And it's a Japanese movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is so great.
The Western Godzillas have kind of sucked.
It's not just that the special effects were great, especially considering I don't think they had that much of a budget.
Right.
They were inventive. You have like the shot selection, the angles, everything about this, you feel like you're in the hands of a budding master who just happens to like Godzilla movies.
So what's the deal? What's the story with this director?
Well, he's done other Godzilla ones, and my wife and son afterwards, they watched the one he did before, and they liked that too. And basically, why they like it is because it gets really into the science. It really right. focuses in on the science of how hard it is to destroy Godzilla and why, and what kind of scientific techniques can we try.
Very interesting. Wow.
You gotta, dude, this Godzilla, look at, you're not just talking to like a fanboy that you read on the internet, like Facebook says, you know, like the millennial is like, oh, Godzilla. Like, you know, I don't trust that, but you can trust me.
I will trust you. I will take a chance on this Godzilla movie. The last Godzilla movie I watched was the Gareth Edwards one.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I would suggest the Godzilla minus zero, minus color edition.
Okay.
That's the one we saw in the theater, and to see it in this black and white, it was so incredible.
Okay, so that you saw that in the theater.
So I saw that in the theater, Civil War, Dune 2, and I'm blanking on it, but I feel like I saw something else in the theater.
Okay, so you've been going a lot, and it's maybe four times.
Yeah, but only because I live an hour away.
Right, but my point is, like, that's more than most people are going to the movies.
Yeah, but I would have seen a lot of other things I can't. Like, for instance, this Fall Guy movie, I want to see it.
Yeah, I do too.
But, I mean, it's an hour away, and I unfortunately, you got kids and they got scheduled. It's like, if the theater that we had in our downtown didn't close in the pandemic, oh my goodness, my kids are in age. We would go to the movies all the time because there's a lot of stuff that it's like, yeah, I don't need a big, great screen. I just want to go see something in the theater. Yeah. And it's just disappointing because my kids finally got at an age where it would be fun to take them to some of these movies.
And there's no theater.
No, I mean, we have a multiplex and it is an hour and 10 minutes away.
That's crazy because I'm trying to decide right now if 40 minutes is too far to go for IMAX.
Yeah, that's lame. You should go. You should go. That's you're just being obnoxious. And I have no sympathy for you because literally my kids, because my kid goes to school an hour away, he goes on a bus every day, hour to and from.
Yeah.
His track meets are then far away. And I just like, you know, hour and 15 minutes each way to a track meet yesterday.
Oh man.
Yeah. I do this stuff all the time. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. No sympathy for me. I deserve no sympathy.
I just don't. And I know you have a big old screen theater set up at home and that makes it easy. And, you know, again, we've gone on about why like the studios screw. I mean, the fact is if their movies are available that you can stream, rent them 1 month after it comes out in the theater, there's not a big push for you to go see it in the theater.
Especially since you're watching everything else at home. That's just become how people watch movies and they've got better home setups. I mean, so many people have 4K TVs now.
I have a 4K TV. Not everything's in 4K, but I mean, it looks good. And I admit that a lot of things, I don't always feel like it doesn't count that I saw it at home instead of the theater. Right. I still am one of the few that I find that the theater is always better, but I'm probably in the minority. I think most people are just like, nah, it's not that much different.
Yeah, no, I think the theater is always better, and I've got a great home setup, but I still prefer the theater. But, like you just said, if you don't catch it in the first week or two, it's pretty much not worth going to the theater.
Yeah, and then, you know, I mean, a movie like The Fall Guy, you're thinking, oh, all the most annoying types of audience goers are going to be at that, seeing it with their phones. I mean, if it wasn't for the studios and the theater screwing things up, the people that go make it the worst because your chances of being annoyed by somebody are, you know, greatly enhanced.
Yeah. Although I will say the theaters around me, or at least the ones I like to go to, play it loud enough that I can't even hear other people talking. But the phone screens really bother me.
That's what I'm talking about. It's so annoying. And so, you know, again, everybody, you know, the theater experience is practically ruined. But I mean, you know, IMAX, if I have to travel, I don't mind going to the IMAX. It just, I don't think I can even get down to IMAX for the new Furiosa because that weekend is very busy. My kids got driver's ed. And
see, yeah, I'm having, that's why the whole drive, the 40 minutes for IMAX is an issue because I've got to deal with the kids' schedules.
Oh, wait, 40 minutes. I would have to drive almost 3 hours. And that's why I can't make it because there would be 6 hours.
Yeah,
that's a legit
excuse. Yeah, no, but mine is, I'm
40 minutes, I could see it that weekend.
I'm going to go with or without them, but I am going to try to schedule them in. What?
I said, you son of a bitch. You don't even do it for the show. See, that was the thing. When we first started this show, you would actually go see movies that I know you would have waited to at home because you're like, well, I got a duty to the show. Well, not anymore, you don't.
Yeah, it's just something's changed for me. It's a lot. It's a lot more of a deal for me to get to the theater.
You old man.
I am an old man.
You old man. Well, you know, I guess the good news is that because everything is streaming and you can get it pretty quick. We got stuff that we watched all available to stream in one format or another. Some are like on your streaming providers. Some you can just on demand rent or whatever. If you have nefarious ways, you can probably get a copy.
And yeah, we saw some 2024 movies.
We did. So, you know, we guess we can talk about them. I don't know which one you want to talk about first. I'll let you decide.
Let's start with Dune 2.
Okay, Dune 2, which I did see in IMAX, but it was kind of at a time when the show was flailing around in its last legs and not going to happen. So we never talked about it because you weren't around.
Because I wasn't around and I hadn't seen it.
I saw it with my family and a good friend from Massachusetts who she earlier, even though we started an IMAX, she didn't have it with it. And I wish I could have seen it. But she did purchase from AMC the Dune popcorn bucket.
Oh, yeah. People were very excited about the Dune popcorn bucket. And my kids really wanted one.
Yeah, she got one.
Okay.
Just a little shout out to Audra, who got a Dune popcorn bucket. You know Audra. You met her once.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So Dune 2. So what'd you think?
I thought it was an awesome big screen event, and it continued. You know, it was a continuation of Dune Part 1. And so it, you know, kind of wrapped up that story, I guess, pretty well. There was a few changes, though, from the book and and the first movie. Well, if people are only familiar with the David Lynch movie, they might be like, well, why aren't they using that voice technique thing? But that was made up for the movie because they couldn't really do the rest of the stuff. The only thing that I liked better in the Dune movie and book that wasn't there is that I dug having Paul's little sister around at the end.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But, you know, they made that change for obvious reasons. And they're going to do a Dune 3. I mean.
So they are doing a Dune 3.
Well, it sounds like they got the green light. And he says he wants to do something else first. You know, he's probably tired from the whole Dune experience. So I don't know when they're going to get to Dune Messiah.
It definitely had an ending, which was kind of like, hey, we're probably going to have another movie.
Yeah, it did. But, I mean, you know, it had the same top-notch visual effects. And
yeah, so here's my complaint about this movie.
Uh-oh. Wow, he jumps in. We now know where he stands on it.
No, you don't.
Okay.
It is a fantastic cinematic experience.
That you saw at home.
That I saw at home. But I turned the sound up pretty loud. And I have a 125-inch screen. It's, you know. But as a cinematic experience, it's fantastic, right? The sound design, the cinematography, the sets, the model work, everything is fantastic. Visually, it is absolutely without peer in science fiction, I think. Costume design, everything. My problem with it was that I felt like the script didn't have time to settle into any of these sequences, and it sort of just went from one point to the next without really getting the time to settle into a scene or sequence.
Well, that's because it's not a streaming limited series, buddy. It's a movie.
Yeah, so I want a streaming limited series of Dune.
Yeah, but you know what? They've already done those, and they're never that good. And so you can't have every cake and want it too. It's really a part two, and you could watch them back to back and get like almost a 6-hour experience.
I know. Yeah, I thought about doing that, actually, because when I first started watching.
But see, it needs like 2 more hours. It's really like an 8-hour experience, but, you know.
It really is. Yeah. And so it started to feel a little bit, the story started to just feel like it was jumping around, like moving too quickly. And so it works as a movie. It's just, I wanted it to keep going. So yes, I wanted an 8-hour movie.
Well, I guess because you enjoyed it then.
I totally enjoyed it. I totally enjoyed it. Yeah. No, I got caught up in it. I like the cast.
I told you that if you started watching it, you weren't going to be able to stop.
Well, and you're right. And I didn't. I paused once to go to the bathroom. But other than that, like, I didn't look at my watch. I looked at my watch once. I was like, oh, I'm probably a half hour into this movie. And I was an hour into it.
You know, I think that if you think about, like, the movie that he gave you in two parts, It's very expansive compared to what David Lynch gave you in 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, no, night and day. I mean,
yet David Lynch included some things that he hasn't included yet.
Yes, that's true.
Like he hasn't included the bending of space time. Like,
right.
The jumping of that. He hasn't shown what spice can do. So like he's still keeping a few bag tricks only because I think he knows, like Vinny knows that Doom Messiah is not the best book.
Right.
And so he's going to have, so I think he's already been like planning on setting certain things up so they can make, so I got a feeling that, you know, it's probably going to depart a little bit from the book in order to make it a better movie.
Yeah, that would make sense. So he's going to do something else first. So it could be a few years.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you know, we're still waiting for Tarantino's next movie. So, you know.
You're going to be waiting a while.
I know. He canceled his film probably because he realized it was going to end up being bad.
What film was it?
The Critic.
Oh, I don't know about it.
So essentially, if you read his movie critic book, which you did not, but I gave it to you. I gave you my copy, which annoyed me.
I read several chapters.
Okay. So he talks at one point about this critic that he used to read, I think, and who like did like a lot of sleazy movies and things. That was his beat. And so Tarantino decided he was going to write a film about this critic in the late 70s. But then it was going to have meta. Like, I think he had these ideas of like being able to show the different endings of movies that he thought should have ended differently that he talks about in this book.
Okay.
And then at one point, he wanted to have Brad Pitt in it, but playing an older version of his character from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
What?
And then it was supposed to have like some meta things that like somehow his movies and stuff would be in this critic's world. I don't know. It sounded wacky. And at some point, he probably was like, this can't be my last movie, you know, right? Like, it could be cool, but, you know, I mean, Brad Pitt was in for it, okay? But it's my last movie, right? So I've got to protect my legacy, okay? And I can't have it be The Critic. So he canceled it.
He should direct Dune 3.
I just think that when you start doing things like self-imposing, like,
yeah,
that's where you get yourself into trouble, because then you get into this. You never commit to making a film. Just, you know what? Don't put an end on things. Just make the movies you want. When you don't feel like making movies anymore, you don't.
Like Bellatar
or Peter Weir. He's,
yeah.
Did Peter Weir? No, he just retired.
He just retired. Yeah.
He didn't die. He just retired. Yeah. He retired a while ago because he got sick, but he just finally felt like, because people were always bothering him, he finally just came out and said, I'm not making any more movies.
Well, because it's a pain in the ass to have to. I think it was Peter Weir that I was seeing about this, just that trying to make a movie is such a huge pain in the ass. Like, why deal with it? So, yeah. So I recommend Dune 2. I don't know. I'm feeling a little grumpy this week.
Well, we don't need to talk about Dune 2 too much, because it's kind of like, it's like the kind of movie that it's best to talk about when it comes out. It's in the theaters. Now it's sort of like leftovers that, if you're catching it now on TV, you know, you sort of missed out on the thing. And so,
do people like this? I mean,
some people really love it. I mean, I liked it a lot. I don't want to say it was a part two and I haven't thought about it a lot.
Well, that's my point, is that it seems like, you know, it was a big thing at the box office for a couple weeks, and then, but it doesn't, you know, like the first Avatar movie really got a fan group going.
It was supposed to come out at the end of November, and then Warner Brothers pulled it because of the strikes. And that was when it should have come out, and it would have been out for Oscars and all that other stuff. And yeah, so instead they were like, well, we got both Oppenheimer and Barbie. We don't want three movies in the mix.
That was stupid.
Whatever. so yeah, you know, whatever. So I mean, yeah, like Dune is the big movie this year. That's the biggest box office film this year.
Yeah.
But like, if you look at like the top five, I mean, a couple of movies that are like, I think the fifth highest grossing film in the world, right, globally for 2024, is the Bob Marley movie.
Really?
Yeah, it made like 177 globally.
Wow. Okay.
But that's a low amount for like being in the top. I mean, it's a slow box office year.
You know, I don't see a Barbenheimer on the horizon.
No, that's a real, like, I mean, again, if you're waiting for that to make your money, then you're going to be waiting a long time. It was like a perfect storm of things. I don't even know. This is like, I can't even think of what's coming out this summer. I mean, am I supposed to get excited about that Pixar movie, the Inside Out sequel, which I didn't like that either.
No, I'm excited about Furiosa and not much else. I'll probably see the Mission Impossible movie.
I don't think that's coming out this year, is it?
I think it is.
Really? No.
No, it's next year.
Yeah, I think so. They got pushed.
Yeah, there's it's not a big summer of things I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I'm feeling grumpy because I'm not loving the 2024 movies.
Well, we got some to talk about besides Dune 2.
What do you want to talk about?
All right, well, I guess we'll talk about one that I wanted to see in the theater, couldn't get to. Now it's streaming, so I've seen it. And it is our good old pals at A24.
Mm-hmm.
Love Lies Bleeding. It's the second film from, was it Rose Glass?
Yeah, and I didn't see St. Maud.
I did, and I didn't like it, though I thought it had some nice style, but I just, by the end of it, I was done with it. But
so what was it that didn't work about it? Was it the script or like?
Well, partly because I saw where it was going, and I didn't find any of it particularly unique.
Okay.
However, and I'm going to be an obnoxious old guy here, I think for those younger viewers who haven't seen a lot of these movies, they might have been like, oh, Rose Glasses, St. Maud's a revelation.
Okay, so yeah, I think that I'm finding that's the case with a lot of movies lately. Like, I read these younger critics. Okay, well, here's an example. I watched this C-grade Nick Cage movie, Arcadian, from this year.
Yeah.
And the reason I watched it is because it had some good reviews.
And I almost watched it because a friend of mine was like, oh, you know, you got to see this Nick Cage movie, Arcadian. And then you saw it and said, yeah, not so fast. And I trust you a little bit more than I trust him, unfortunately. But
yeah, I mean, if you're in the mood for a C-grade creature feature with people in a house and being threatened by some creatures, fine. It's fine. But so many of the reviews I saw were like, well, at least there's fresh creature design. And the whole time I'm thinking these creatures are awful. They're stupid. They look dumb. Their powers and skills and abilities keep changing in a way that means there's no rules to anything. You know, like they can stretch their finger to fit through a keyhole, but then they can't break down a door, even, you know, stuff like that, where it just makes no sense. But these reviews were like, hey, the creatures are great. And I'm like, you've never seen a movie before if you think these creatures are cool.
When it comes to these younger critics, and again, I don't know names and I don't know ages and all that stuff, they're trying to make their mark.
Yeah.
And part of their whole spiel and their generation is the older people are always telling us that we know nothing and stuff. And so almost to prove their point that they know nothing, they refuse to actually get too into the weeds of seeing a lot of classic films. I suppose in our day when we were going through and seeing movies, and of course, you know, I think in the last 5-6 years, I've really increased my film education and had missed a lot.
Yeah.
But I knew a lot more than, you know, most kids in the 80s that I knew.
Yeah.
Because I was watching stuff. But, you know, the critics that I was reading and talking, they probably, you know, they had their 50s and their 60s movies and things that they referenced that like, oh, well, you haven't seen this and that. But we came of age during a very revolutionary time when the 1970s, the rating system was the first time was in effect.
Yeah.
But what that did was it allowed filmmakers to explore themes and things that they could never do before. And it had started in Europe in the 60s. But so we got to see a lot of films that really, you know, set the mark. And then in the 80s, a lot of genre films and things. Yeah. So, I mean, of course, now that I'm, you know, 53, I've seen a huge history of film and came up with a slot. So for a younger critic coming up, they just have even more years to get through.
A lot more years to get through. And sometimes they haven't, you know, like this Nick Cage movie, it's a creature feature B movie, right? So I've seen a bunch of those.
Right.
Right, over the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, and so maybe if it's framed a certain way and the critics like, hey, this is nothing more than this, but here's why I liked it, that would be more helpful.
Some of them did say that, you know, this is like just a good genre exercise or something. And I'm up for those kinds of movies. I will say about this movie, this is a really interesting thing. I don't know if it was just the day I was having, but every jump scare worked on me. And I was like, okay, but jump scare, like that's no reason to recommend a movie is because there's like 4 good jump scares in it.
Now you've totally derailed the conversation about the movie we were going to talk about.
Oh yeah, let's go back to Love Lies Bleeding.
But on that note, so here's a film that, again, I don't know what the young critics are saying and if they think it was some brand new fresh thing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it as a B-movie neo-noir that had all of the tropes and conventions baked in of a neo-noir or a film noir, but it did have some new elements, which I enjoyed, and I feel like it fits snugly in as almost like, in the years to come, a nice classic example of a neo-noir that's worthy of being in the neo-noir slot. You know, like, am I going to remember it come Best Picture time? No. Does it fall apart in a few areas for me? Yes, it does. But I like this pulpy attitude it has. And I like the fact that it bends heavily on this lesbian love affair between Kristen Stewart, who I think, you know, there was a time when Kristen Stewart was not a very good actor.
Yes.
I think so. The Twilight movies prove that. But I think she recognized that she wasn't that great an actor, and she had two ways to go: become a better actor and take more interesting parts, and so she can get better.
Yeah.
Or follow down a path of like the Snow White and the Huntsman.
Right.
She has gone down this path of weird indie movies, interesting characters and choices, and then you get to a movie like Love's Lies Bleeding, and she just feels like the acting champion who just is so good.
Yeah, I mean, she just it's a fantastic performance. I liked her character. She's basically a dirtbag, but she's
yes.
I mean, this is like a dirtbag noir, right? Just like a bunch of lowlifes kind of scrambling around trying to make something work out of their life. And
yeah, and they're in this dirt, like, border town in New Mexico. And
and the seedy gym that she works at, where she, like, is a steroid dealer on the side.
Aspects of like that, like this other troubled character, which I don't think we ever fully get her backstory because there seems to be some hints of that. But Katie O'Brien, what I like about, I've read some reviews that thought that, like, well, Katie O'Brien is serviceable but not that good an actor. And I actually disagree. I thought she was really good.
Yeah.
And what I liked about it is she's an actor who's like, yeah, was a former bodybuilder, gets to be an action role. She plays like an imperial, like, baddie on The Mandalorian.
Oh, okay.
She's always on the ship, and she's got, like, the suit, and she's got... you're like, oh, my God, that's Katie O'Brien. You'll go back, and you'll recognize her now. She gets a chance to, like, be a real character.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting character, and I actually have a lot of sympathy for her, and I feel bad for her. I like her transformation mentally and physically when she's getting on the steroids.
Okay, let's talk about that.
But wait. However, so there's this movie kind of like, it kind of deeps into body horror.
Yes, a little bit, yeah.
And there's fantastical elements, which I think kind of shapes Katie O'Brien's character's state of mind.
Yes.
At the end of the movie, it goes a little over the top, and that part doesn't work for me.
It was so audacious and so bold that it could have been a huge success, but instead it actually is a failure, the ending.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't take it, like, I've actually read some reviews where people took it as, like, going on to some kind of actual fantastical element land.
Oh, I didn't get that at all.
I got it more as a metaphorical thing.
Yeah.
But it shows a little bit of failure, I think, on the director's part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that it didn't need that. I would have liked a different choice that could have figured out the ending without that.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, because it kind of undoes the movie a little bit. Now, you said there were some other points in it where it started to fall apart a little bit.
Oh, wait, that was a big one. I mean, that's at the very end. But I think once you get into the last third of the movie, some of the formula elements of neo-noir take over, and it kind of gets rushed, and maybe they edited it down, but like, it felt like there was this potential relationship with the FBI.
Yeah.
And I feel like that didn't get the full exploration that it deserved.
There's a whole story there with the Ed Harris character, and the FBI's closing in on him, and then nothing happens with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's where I said, like, these are some of the things that, like, I recognize that had these things been able to be worked out a little bit better, I think the movie could have been up there a little bit more for me. I think I enjoyed it more watching it, and then on circumspect, I liked it a little less.
Okay.
However, you know, the things that I did like with the sort of fantastical body horror was showing Katie O'Brien's character's her muscles like rippling and getting bigger, and then her scene when she's at the competition.
Yes.
And again, I also thought that, you know, look, the sex scene or scenes, I think it's one, I don't know, between her and Kristen Stewart. I mean, it was really, it was pretty bold.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that those are things that maybe Rose Glass is bringing to the table with these actors that you don't see in all these movies. And then there's a scene with Katie O'Brien and Dave Franco. And I'm never going to forget it. I mean, there's an image there that I have not seen in a movie, and you see it just enough a couple of times. And I know what you know. You know what I'm talking about.
Like, the violence is gritty. The whole thing is grimy.
And by the way, audience, offline and edited out, I cleared it up for Dale.
You know, yeah, so I now exactly know what you're talking about. I now know what you're talking about.
You silly person.
But, so, okay. I felt like the script was not as tight as it needs to be for this genre. If you know, something like Blood Simple or A Simple Plan or Body Heat, you know, the scripts are really tight in terms of motive and consequence for decisions. And this film seemed a little looser to me. I couldn't, like, the action reaction consequence chain is not well-defined enough for it to really be a tense thriller. It's one of those, like, we got to hide the body kind of plots.
Well, it needed to either be longer or shorter.
Yeah, and I think I would have cut some stuff out, like the whole FBI plot. And so my issue with the movie is I think the script is just a little too loose and not tight enough to succeed in this genre, where it really has to be like clockwork.
Well, see, I think that when they were, you know, working on the script, I think they needed the FBI angle because the cops in the town were corrupt.
Right.
And so the only way he's going to get in trouble, but, like, again, it pins itself into a corner and it doesn't successfully close the loop. And so, again, I still think it's an enjoyable enough neo-noir just because of the fact that it's set with this bodybuilder and the relationship between Katie O'Brien and Kristen Stewart. Like, I think that is the part that shines the most for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, though, I got about halfway through and I was just like, I hate this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and now in retrospect, I don't hate it, but I would have a tough time recommending it because I feel like it's just kind of all like I like the setting, I like the two central performances, I like their love story and their characters. It's just everything around them is not held together very well. It's like there's a lot of duct tape and string, and you can see it.
I think I liked it better than you, but, like, I liked it and then didn't like it as much.
Yeah.
You didn't like it and maybe liked it a little bit more. I love neo-noirs.
It's your genre, and so this is a decent entry in the genre, but it's definitely not it doesn't transcend the genre in any way. And I think it was trying to.
I mean, I've seen better, you know, a lot better movies, and like, you want to see, like, the greatest of the greatest neo-noir, you got to see Arthur Penn's Night Moves.
Yeah.
That is just absolutely one of the greatest movies. It's one of the greatest movies of the 70s, never mind of the genre. But it's just, it's one of those movies that every time you watch it, you're like it more and more.
Yeah.
It's one of those you have to watch more and more. Whereas this one, I think if anything, you're going to see it fall apart more if you watch it again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just one plot hole and cheap movie logic trick after another.
Well, okay. Like, I feel bad, but, like, I liked Jenna Malone's character, the sister, but, like, it was, I mean, again, it was so brutal seeing that. And these are the touches that I like from Rose Glass, seeing what her face looked like in the hospital.
Yes.
Somebody finally, like,
did that for real. Yeah.
What it would really look like if somebody beat up their wife, what it would look like. And it's just so repulsive. But what you're talking about with these plots, there's this character, Anna Baryshnikov, who is in love with Kristen Stewart.
Yeah.
And at a key moment of getaway, she just happens to be somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, totally convenient. So many conveniences and coincidences in this movie. And, you know, Hitchcock, who was good at making this kind of movie, said coincidences happen in real life, but they don't happen in movies.
Yeah, except for that he breaks his own rules because he has lots of everything in his scripts are like stuff that just have to neatly wind together, especially in his later years. Oh my God, which
you're right about that. But my point is just that there's too many. That character showing up is just too much of a coincidence for me. And
at that moment,
it's just too perfect. And then it doesn't really go anywhere. And then that ends up with this stupid misunderstanding between in the love story that like,
well, that's again, this is why like somebody should have sat down with Rose Glover.
Yeah.
Grass and her co-writer, Wynorica Tofiliska or whatever. And sometimes like that character was to serve really one purpose, yeah, and that's for the payoff then. But I think what you're arguing, and I'm, is that the character in itself was unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary.
If you'd taken that out, if actually it made it a little bit harder for you to be sympathetic to Katie O'Brien later.
Way, way harder.
And you didn't need that.
Yeah, it was totally unnecessary. And it also, if you're going to have that kind of misunderstanding, it undermines the love story.
Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So it undermines the character and the love story. So I'm not recommending this movie.
All right. So again, this is why Teal's grumpy this week, because we don't have like slam bang like winners to talk about. And speaking of that, we got another one we're gonna talk about.
And then I saw that Arcadian movie because I'm like, I'm up for a B movie now. And no. So this is why I'm grumpy. I hate everything.
Well, here's another B movie. And it's definitely a B movie. It ain't an A movie. And maybe for me, it's more of a C. But Dev Patel, actor, he is getting in on the directing game and has made his first film. It's called Monkey Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an interesting sort of production history.
Very interesting production history.
It was finished a couple of years ago, and I think it was purchased by Netflix. And then it sat on a shelf. And that doesn't mean it was a bad movie while it sat on a shelf. It sat on a shelf for other reasons. And I think I'm going to let you take over a little bit since you saw this first and then I watched it.
Yeah, so allegedly Netflix was nervous about releasing this in India because it's critical of Hindu nationalists. And the movie brings up oppression of Muslims and trans people and sort of fighting for the underdog in this religiously oppressive system. And so Netflix allegedly was a little worried about that. They did actually make some digital alterations to the film. The primary color of the ruling party in India is orange.
Okay.
So in the crowd scenes, in the fighting when he's Monkey Man, there were people holding orange signs. They digitally changed them to red.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was one of the post-production things that happened. And so there's some sticky politics around this movie. If you know more about India than I do, I probably got it all wrong. But but nonetheless, there was a little controversy. And so Jordan Peele picked up the movie and convinced Universal to do theatrical for it. The movie was shot like during COVID for $10 million. Their cameras broke. They had to shoot parts on iPhones.
And GoPros,
yeah. And everything was constantly breaking. It sounds like it was a real DIY labor of love kind of effort where the film kept getting shut down. They'd have to put stuff on credit cards. Their location was canceled at the last minute, on and on. It just like everything that could go wrong went wrong with this movie. And somehow they managed to actually get something made.
And the result feels a little bit like that.
It does. It feels a little chaotic. Yeah.
And I feel like you don't always, maybe because they couldn't even have filmed it, I don't feel like you always get enough information to make the points that he wants to make.
Oh, you don't get any information at all. It's really hard to...
Well, I'm talking about like when you finally get some pieces of the backstory, which it's done in a method that I don't particularly care for.
You mean the flashback?
Yeah. Like the way doling out like, oh, you have this character, but then there's more behind the scenes. Unfortunately, the way it's told, and I'm going to just, you know, again, I don't care what problems may have happened to the set. This is where the fault is Dev Patel's.
I don't have a problem with the filmmaking. I have a problem with the script.
Well, that's part of the filmmaking.
No, but like, I don't have an issue with parts of it being on GoPro.
But your problems with the script might have to do with the fact that they didn't get to shoot all the stuff.
Good point. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you get what you get is that I just, like, through editing, I don't know how he, if this is the way he wanted to tell the story. I've seen this enough times now where you get this character and they're acting a certain way and then you got to get a flashback to like what's making them this way. Why do they want revenge? Unfortunately, yeah. Whether or not he had the money, I don't think that he was able to tell the flashback well enough. But I mean, again, so it's a choppy film. It does have a few great fun like action sequences.
Oh, there's some great fights in it.
But it is murky. The movie is super murky.
Okay. We have this guy, we meet this guy, he's on a revenge trip, and he's kind of a down-and-out loser kind of guy who gets beat up for a living. He's on this revenge trip. I'm going to spoil the movie slightly, but not terribly. He fails.
Yes.
He fails, is considered dead, is revived by some nice women that meet him and revive
him. Well, he's not considered dead. They're looking for him.
Oh, I guess that's true. Yeah, they are looking for him. But
don't worry, Teal's not going to spoil for you because he can't even remember the plot.
Can't even remember the damn movie. So, anyhow, so he's sort of resurrected, right? He like gets shot and falls in a river, and then he's resurrected, and he's got to come back. And they say, you know, you have to be who you really are. And he's like, what? Who am I? And then he has a flashback and a training montage, and suddenly everything's fine.
In a month.
Right, but. I thought he was going to have to like go into the depths of figuring out who he is. No, he's just like, oh, I need to say I know who I am and then I'll win.
It's not that good.
But there's no actual transition. And then when he comes back, he's like superhuman. So the action scenes lose their edge because in the beginning, when he's first on and he's kind of a loser, he's getting destroyed and it's great. Because you feel it for him, but then he comes back and he's like superhuman and it's just him beating up a bunch of guys. And then the women who saved him come running in to help him in a battle and they all die and there's no solution to their story.
Oh, the squad of trans warriors?
Yes, a bunch of them die.
Yeah, I know. It's not, again, it's not a very good movie, in my opinion.
It says right off the bat, it's like, hey, do you want to buy this gun? This is the gun John Wick uses.
I know. It almost wanted to be like in the Wikiverse.
Well, but the thing is, this is a whole subgenre, which is the brutal revenge movie, right?
What I would say is a much better one is Bob Odenkirk's Nobody.
I would totally agree. And yeah, but it is a subgenre with Nobody and Monkey Man and John Wick is these sort of like extended brutal action scenes and fights.
That's basically what anybody that's going to rent this, tune in, they're going to look for the action scenes. And there's, you know, enough of them. They were enjoyable. I mean, we had a good time, but I was kind of, I don't want to say I was checked out, but I was kind of getting bored with the movie.
Yeah, about halfway through this movie, I just wrote in my notes, I don't like this movie.
Now, I had no idea what you were going to say. I think that I gave you maybe a couple of hints. Because you know me, it's very hard. If I really like something,
yeah,
like I'll say like, oh, this is really good. And I wasn't saying that with any of these movies. And as a matter of fact, one that I had started watching.
Oh, yes. And I watched the first 25 minutes of that.
Well, that's all I told you to watch because we watched the first 25 minutes of this third movie that I thought we could talk about. And I thought, hey, you know what? This is the kind of film that we should champion on the show. And then we watched the rest of it. And it just was so bad and it just never ended. And it was basically a low budget 80, maybe 82 minute movie that they made 2 hours. And I just, there was not enough of a concept to go. It was a short story movie that they made into a feature. And everything that was somewhat charming about it, you completely got sick of. Like almost after the 25 minute mark. And this is a movie that you may be seeing on the streaming services and things called Riddle of Fire.
Yeah. It has one great thing going for it.
Yeah. It's shot in 16 millimeter and it's shot like scope 16 millimeter.
Yeah.
So it has a cool, interesting look to it.
Yes, it does. But that's about it.
And it has this Baroque music, and it kind of feels like a weird fairy tale.
But the kids aren't very good actors.
No, and I could be okay with that because it's somewhat charming and low budget. But imagine those same not very good actors for 2 hours.
And the one kid they have to subtitle?
Yeah, because he couldn't speak very well. Yeah.
That annoyed me. I was like, it's fine if I don't understand him. I don't need subtitles for one character.
Well, see, we watch everything with subtitles because my wife, over the last few years, like, had discovered that her hearing was, like, gone. And so we watch everything with subs. And so I knew there was a different subtitle coming on.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it gets really convoluted. They, like, end up going off on this quest for a speckled egg. It's so stupid.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it just keeps going and going, and then they end up with, like, these poachers, and then, like, going into their truck and go out in the middle of the woods, and then some of the poachers is, like, this coven of sort of witches. Then there's this little daughter that she also knows how to do the witchcraft, and she, like, hooks up with the kids, and it's just, like, at some point, you're like, please let this movie end. My wife was getting, like, actually audibly angry at the movie because she was, like, looking at her phone. She's like, Jesus Christ, won't this movie be over? It really was a slog.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I got its charms, but I also got its flaws, and I can see how those over 2 hours would be absolutely infuriating.
It kind of bums me out because I'm always looking for that low-budget movie that sort of first showcases what possible talents a new director has.
Yeah.
I feel like with the movie that I saw, he could have cut some stuff out. And I think that is a problem with the young filmmakers today. Yeah. They don't understand that less is more, not more. More is less sometimes.
But also, all these movies that we're talking about all have script issues, right? Like Riddle of Fire, it's a pacing and story issue.
Well, I think this guy probably isn't that great a writer, and he came up with this idea, and he didn't have the abilities to know. Because sometimes it's not about cutting something out. In order to cut something out, you have to rework something to make something else work, and I don't think people do the work. Yeah. They don't put that in to figure out, oh, it's not a matter of just taking these things out. Take these things out, rewrite those other scenes so they work better, and now you got a better movie.
Monkey Man, I'll give a little bit of a pass because of the production, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying a pass in terms of it's good, but in terms of, like, some of the script problems. You're right.
Yeah,
some
maybe,
of that.
Yeah, maybe because we don't know.
We don't know. So, but on Love Lies Bleeding, they had plenty of time to work on this, and they should have done a few more drafts of the script, and they would have had a really solid movie. As it is, it's pretty forgettable.
I bet you that there's a good 20 minutes that was shot and in a rougher cut.
Yeah.
And they were cutting things because they were going too long. But see, then that also presents a problem, is that no matter whether things would have worked better, was longer or whatever,
yeah,
the problems of the story were still there.
Exactly.
And they just weren't figured out. When you're ready to shoot, you should try to work all these things through. And I know, like, I've seen enough of these Project Greenlight movies and things to see how at every level, the studios and their supposed experts are always monkeying around and wanting to say, this doesn't have this and that. And then, you know.
Yeah, part of this is that those people's job is to give notes on stuff, whether it needs notes or not.
I know. That's the problem. They, like, have to put their stamp on it. And that can really be...
It can ruin a movie. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's just a too many cooks kind of problem.
So I think we need to get Kristen Stewart on the show and have to go through the movie with us.
Yeah, because I felt like it. Like I said before, these kinds of movies, neo-noir needs to be clockwork. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And this thing, it's a mess.
Yeah, but here's what I like about it. And this is what I like about the neo-noir and why I feel like it's a B movie, but it may be remembered, and that it's just going to be one of those that, like Criterion in a few years will do some kind of neo-noir series, and it might pop up because it has an interesting angle and has some moments that you'll remember and take away from. And I think that's all in the bodybuilding stuff and that relationship. It's like a
yes.
It's the new coat of paint on the neo-noir stamp.
That was the most interesting. That's the best part of the movie is the love story.
Yeah, and you know, those neo-noirs, look, there's been only one other film, and it's not fair, I think, to compare it as if, like, well, this falls into the, what, lesbian neo-noir genre?
Right.
That and the one other movie, Bound. Bound was the better film because the story and plot was better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it fit well
in. Yeah, Bound is one I was thinking about, not because of the lesbian angle, but because it's such a tight script.
But this movie was a better lesbian movie than that was.
Much better lesbian movie, but as a noir scripts have to be tight and with a specific direction that they're sort of barreling towards inevitably. And this movie, what it was barreling towards at the end is not something the director should have done. So that's why I'm grumpy, because when I go to watch a movie, I want to like it. I want to have a good time. I want to enjoy it. And when I don't, I get grumpy. And then I watch like three in a row and I'm even grumpier.
Uh-oh. Well, that's why we do these episodes on genres or special things that we pick out. And to the fault, it's usually that we all like those movies that we're watching. So it's always a positive experience. So maybe there's something that's good about occasionally going through watching three movies that aren't necessarily connected by a theme, right, and we get what we get. It wasn't like, oh, I saw this and now we should watch and talk about it on the show, you know?
We said, let's do some 2024 movies. Here's a few that we want to see and maybe throw in an extra here and there. I threw in The Arcadian, you threw in The Riddle of Fire.
Yeah. I can't decide whether that was a mistake or not. But
both of those movies we didn't like either. So, no. You know, and then nobody's going to the theater and it's like, well, if this is what's at the theater, no wonder I'm not going.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that for me, Dune 2 would have been the best of all those that we talked about.
Absolutely.
I think you'd agree with that. And then for me, I liked Love Lies Bleeding better than I liked Monkey Man.
Oh, that's a tough call for me.
Well, they're different genres, but I mean,
I don't know if I could.
Something.
I didn't like either of them.
Like, there was something kind of weird and sexy about Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien together. And I like that.
Yes. No, like I said, the best part of the movie is the love story. Their characters are interesting. Their love story is interesting. I wish they'd focused on that a little bit more in the second half of the movie instead of some of the shenanigans that are kind of pointless.
Like Katie O'Brien's character, right? She was like bodybuilder, supposedly tough, but you could see this sort of tenderness and like a little girl in her eyes.
Yeah.
When she was with Kristen Stewart. And that she needed someone to take care of her, and she was lost. And of course, Kristen Stewart didn't have any good upbringing, so she's like bringing all the bad elements. I mean, she introduces her to
steroids. She's like, "Ooh, I've got a present for you. Here's some steroids."
Which I didn't see coming. I'll be honest; I didn't know that was part of the plot. I mean, I did know some of the movie, and so I was like interested always to see where it was going. It's just the third act had a lot of problems.
It completely falls apart.
Yeah, and Ed Harris, the wig that he was wearing with the hair, I didn't like that.
It was silly.
It was silly. When I think it looks like a fake wig, it looks silly.
You're like a half an hour into the movie before you figure out that he's her father.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of thought he was her father.
There's a bunch of things like this that just come up too late. Monkey Man did the same thing.
Well, see, I saw the trailer. If you see the trailer for Love Lies Bleeding, you kind of know.
Okay, so I didn't see the trailer, and so I was trying, like, I was, it took me a while to figure out that that was her sister's husband.
Oh, I was picking that stuff up.
I was slow, and
it's okay, you know, you need a little coaxing.
I do. I can totally understand on the Silver Globe, but this kind of movie is beyond me.
Maybe you need to start watching the movies with the subtitles. Maybe that's why I pick up these things now that we watch everything with subtitles. It's a lot easier. And you know what? I swear to God, I am like, I pick up on things a lot more. The thing that's frustrating is I end up like, no matter what, I look at the subtitles more than I want to. But, you know, my wife really needs to enjoy the movies.
No, I mean, that makes sense.
Whatever. So look at this was it. Nice tight hour show today.
Of 2024. Yeah.
Of 24. Yep. A24 and 2024.
The bitter pill of 2024.
Wow. Well, maybe this is it. The last time we'll. Well, you know what? Usually we have so many other things to talk about. We're never going to. We will skip over movies that aren't that.
Exactly.
Great.
No, but I'm glad we did this because it's kind of fun to check in halfway through the year and be like, here's some stuff that's come out. But now I want to watch some good movies for the next show. So hopefully we can come up with something for that.
Yes. I think I have plenty of good movies that I keep telling you to watch and you never watch them. So maybe you will.
Maybe we can do that for the next show.
All right.
So I'm not forced to watch more of these just weak movies.
All right. Well, listen, everybody, we've given you no recommendations pretty much, but go watch them at your dare or your mercy.
No, we recommend Dune.
We, of course, recommend Dune, but I recommended you see it a month ago, people, when it was in the theater. All right. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.